This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Let's talk about salmon. It's the pink stuff on the plate. Does it matter where it comes from? Yes, indeed, as we'll learn from West Coast salmon campaigner Catherine Stewart. She's a campaign manager for the Living Ocean Society. Welcome, Catherine.
Thanks. It's nice to be here.
Just quickly on the basics, what kind of salmon do we eat and where are the last wild stocks?
That's a pretty big question. We eat wild salmon and some people still eat farm salmon. Here in British Columbia and in Alaska, we have one of the greatest abundances of wild stocks remaining, and in Russia too, in far eastern Russia. So the Pacific Rim. And we have five native species of salmon in BC, the pinks, the chums, the sockeye, the chinook, and the coho. And then there's the Atlantic fish farms.
These are spectacular fish, though, and they start out in tiny streams, move out to that open ocean, and always they find their way right back again. Do we know where they're going when they're out at sea?
We don't know enough. We know, for example, that sockeye from the Fraser River will migrate out through the basin, up between Vancouver Island and the mainland coast of BC, travel up into Alaskan waters, go out into the North Pacific, and then return home. Sometimes along the west coast of Vancouver Island, often back down through the strait. But where they go when they're out in the North Pacific and exactly what food sources they're finding and how many other stocks are out there, we don't know enough. We need to do a lot more research to learn about salmon and about how they're being affected by oceanic conditions, including changes brought on by climate change.
Yeah, are they sensitive to heat? Does that affect them going up the rivers and that sort of thing?
They're very sensitive to heat. If water temperatures in the rivers start reaching 20, 22 degrees Celsius, salmon can die before they even reach their spawning beds. So if we see lowered water levels because there's less snowpack, because the climate is changing, then the water is going to warm up faster in the rivers and the salmon will be affected by that and often die.
And what are some of the other factors affecting our wild salmon these days?
Well, everything. I mean, if you think about a salmon emerging from a gravel bed way up the Fraser River, for example, and traveling hundreds of miles, their spawning habitat can be destroyed by pollution, by urban development, by logging to the banks of streams, silt and debris in the streams, by dogs and cattle and anything that might disturb the gravel beds. As they travel downstream, they can be affected by pollution from pulp mills on the river, people pouring waste oil or antifreeze down the drain on the street corner often don't realize they're pouring that directly into the habitat of our wild salmon. And then, of course, there's the level of fishing pressure, sea lice and disease transfer from open net cage salmon farms, climate affecting upwelling of nutrients in the ocean. There are so many risk factors that affect the survival of wild salmon. And yet wild salmon are so important to the functioning of our coastal ecosystem. They not only feed the orcas, the killer whales, the eagles and the grizzly bears and even the coastal wolves, but they also feed the old growth forests. Studies that have been done at University of Victoria indicate that up to 70% of the nitrogen that fuels the growth of those magnificent 1,000-year-old cedar trees comes from the carcasses of the salmon that are dragged into the riparian zone by predators.
So we really need these fish, but as people who are going to restaurants, we think to ourselves, well, we can always just raise salmon in fish farms. That's called aquaculture. And that's what you're working on, I take it.
Yes, that's right. And there is nothing fundamentally wrong with the concept of aquaculture. The problem is the way that we're practicing it right now. The large commodity scale industrial feedlots that we place right on the migratory routes of our wild salmon are causing myriad problems.
And where do we get the food for those salmon?
Largely from industrial meal fisheries. We fish anchovies, sardines, often in the Southern Ocean, in Peru, for example, or in the North Sea, if in the case of European fish farms. And those fish, which could feed humans and which are an integral part of the ocean food web, are ground up into meal and oil and used to feed carnivorous fish such as salmon, as well as pigs and chickens and other farm animals.
And where are these aquaculture farms located? What countries are we finding them?
Well, the biggest producers in the world are Norway, Chile, Canada, the East Coast and the West Coast of Canada, and then there are other smaller producers. Scotland, Ireland, New Zealand is beginning to get into salmon farming. But yeah, Norway, Chile, and Canada are the big three.
And are they local operations or big multinational companies?
Big multinationals. 90% of the fish farms on the British Columbia coast are owned by three large Norwegian multinationals. And Chile as well. Huge concentration of the same companies in Chile.
So wherever you go in the world, you can keep running into the same Norwegian companies running these farms?
Pretty much. There are some exceptions. They don't have as big a presence in the east coast of Canada, for example, as they do on the west coast or in Chile or in Scotland. But they do certainly dominate the global industry.
Is it true that Norway had to poison some of the rivers to get rid of diseases brought by farmed fish?
Yes, quite a while ago. They've had problems, serious problems with escapes because they're raising these fish in net cages that are suspended in the water. The nets can be damaged by predators. They can be damaged just by human error. They can be torn in storms. Anchors can slip off a cliff and pull the corners of the cages underwater. You get all kinds of reasons why large escape events can happen, and thousands of fish will spill out of these pens and go into the rivers. If the fish are diseased, they can spread that disease to the wild stocks. And so it was probably, it must have been 15 years ago or so, where Norway had such a problem with disease outbreaks in the wild stocks that they dumped rotenone in a couple of their river systems, just killed everything, and started trying to rebuild it from scratch.
Something we don't want to have happen here on Canada's west coast. You mentioned sea lice earlier. What is that threat and how do companies try to handle it?
Well, sea lice are a naturally occurring phenomena, and the aquaculture industry will always say, well, what's the problem? You'll find sea lice on wild salmon. Well, you will. But when an adult mature salmon returns to its natal stream to spawn and enters fresh water, the sea lice, which are just a parasite that attach themselves to the salmon, will fall off and die because they can't survive in fresh water. And there would be no host for them. Once the salmon went into the fresh water, there were no other fish that they could attach themselves to survive. Well, then you take a large industrial fish farm and you plop it right down in the mouth of the river and you cram it full of 750,000 foreign, non-indigenous Atlantic salmon in the Pacific Ocean, and you raise them in these packed conditions. Then when the returning wild salmon pass by the farms, the sea lice will transfer to the farms. But then it's a perfect host for a parasite. It's like a smorgasbord. And they breed and the populations of lice explode and all the eggs and the females with egg chains on them go looking for another host. And when the tiny little baby wild salmon, a pink salmon, for example, when it emerges from its spawning gravel is no bigger than my little finger. When they come out into what would once have been clean ocean waters with no parasites, they run into clouds of sea lice that infect them and often kill them. Most of the time will kill them if they get heavy lice loads. And if they don't kill them outright, they make them much more vulnerable to predators. Other salmon like coho will prey on tiny pink salmon. And if the salmon are weakened by parasite attached to their body, then they're much more likely to fall victim to predators. So we've replaced a natural, healthy, functioning system with one that is putting at risk the survival of the wild stocks. To treat the lice on the farms, the farmers generally use a chemical called amimectin benzoate. Its manufacturer recommends against its use in aquatic environments, but they do get a special permit to use it to treat the lice on the fish, on their farmed fish. Problem, of course, is that sea lice are a crustacean, and using this chemical in the feed in the salmon farms, we don't know how it's affecting other crustaceans in the area of the farms, such as prawns.
We're talking with Catherine Stewart, campaign manager for the Living Ocean Society at livingoceans.org. Catherine, before you joined the aquaculture campaign, you spent 17 years with Greenpeace in Canada. How would you compare your successful negotiations with the big forest companies for the Great Bear Rainforest with the current efforts in the salmon industry?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I think that there's a cycle that happens in campaigns where you spend a lot of time raising awareness about the problem. You start to build pressure on the industry and government demanding change. And you get to a point where the pressure is so sustained and so serious that the industry has no choice but to deal with it. And it's often then that you enter into negotiations. And we're seeing that same pattern that emerged in the forest campaigns in BC repeated in our campaigns to get the salmon farming industry to clean up its act. So we are now negotiating with BC's largest producer, one of the big Norwegian three, Marine Harvest, looking at doing some collaborative science, alternating fallow routes where farms are emptied during the out-migration period. But these are interim measures, and what we really need is to get all these farms out of the water and into closed containment systems, either land-based or floating closed tank systems. You need to separate farms from the natural marine ecosystem, because lice are only one of the problems with farms. They get permits to shoot and kill predators such as seals and sea lions. The predators can also get tangled in the nets and drown. They dump all of the fish feces and the waste feed on the ocean bottom, smothering it. The list goes on and on and on. I mean, the bottom line is that people eating farm salmon should tell their grocer, their restaurant, their favorite restaurant that's serving it, that they do not want to eat this product until the industry cleans up its act.
This is the Radio EcoShock Show with Alex Smith. Find us every Sunday night at 10:35 on Green 960 online and radio from the heart of San Francisco. We cover your climate, peak oil, the economy, everything that impacts our marvelous planet. The complete collection of past EcoShock shows are available as free MP3 downloads from the website www.ecoshock.org. That's ECO, shock like an electric shock, .org. Now let's get back to our interview with Catherine Stewart, aquaculture and fisheries campaigner for the Living Oceans Society. And so that's why you have the slogan Farmed and Dangerous. Can you tell us about the partnership that Living Oceans has with other nonprofit organizations working on this campaign?
Sure. Well, farmedanddangerous.org is the website of the Coastal Alliance for Aquaculture Reform, which involves other groups such as the David Suzuki Foundation, Georgia Strait Alliance. There are five groups in total that join together to try and force this industry to change. The industry and its supporters often characterize us as anti-aquaculture, but that's not the case. We know that aquaculture has a place in a world where wild fish stocks are in serious and profound decline, and where a growing population is demanding more and more fish protein. Aquaculture does have a place, but it has to be done properly and in a way that doesn't threaten the critical ecosystem functions of our natural environments.
The First Nations people have depended on salmon for thousands of years. What is their part in this picture now?
Well, I think First Nations are in a challenging position. Many of them strongly object to the incursion of fish farms into their traditional territories. They're seeing elevated levels of mercury in rockfish around the salmon farms. Their clam beds are being destroyed by waste and fecal matter from the salmon farms. I mean, it's not just their wild salmon that's being affected. It's all of their traditional marine foods resources. So many of the First Nations do not want the farms in their territory unless they're in closed contained systems. Some, however, some communities are dealing with unemployment of 90%, and they're looking for any way of keeping food on the table and people in jobs. And so they have agreed to tolerate the fish farm industry in their communities, although I have to say in most instances not with a great deal of enthusiasm. And they play a critical role in the fight because in British Columbia in particular, First Nations have never ceded their territories. And so they are, the government, the federal and provincial governments are obliged to consult with, and now the Supreme Court has ruled, consult with and accommodate the interests of First Nations. They're a key player in trying to force change on this unsustainable industry.
And where is the government? It's supposed to be an impartial regulator, but is it really an industry booster?
Very much so, unfortunately. Both the federal and the British Columbia provincial government have been huge supporters of the aquaculture industry. I think they find fish in pens much easier to manage than wild salmon. And they have advocated for the industry, subsidized it, promoted it. A lot of our tax dollars go to boosting the sales of farm fish product. About 80% of the fish that the aquaculture industry in BC produces, the salmon, goes to the U.S. marketplace. So U.S. consumers have a huge role to play in this. They need to ask when they're in a restaurant or a grocery store, is this farmed or wild? And if it's farmed, they need to tell their retailer, don't sell this product until the industry changes.
You're talking about consumer choice here, but Jennifer Jacquette suggested that NGOs should go past that and go after the big multinational food companies and the fishing companies. Are you doing that?
We are doing that, actually. For a long time, CAR has had a campaign where we've been pressuring major grocery retailers, such as Safeway, to stop carrying farm salmon, or if they're not willing to stop immediately, to push the industry for a better product, to demand change. I mean, the retail sector is in a position to push their suppliers for a better product. And that's exactly what we saw on the forest front when companies like Home Depot started saying, we don't want to be responsible for the clear-cut devastation of ancient old-growth forests, some of the last temperate rainforests on Earth. We don't want to be a party to that. We want the industry to change its practices and provide us with a more sustainable product. So we're making some gains. Compass Canada, for example, is a supplier who provides food services to institutions right across the country, the City of Ottawa, the University of Ottawa, large healthcare facilities and educational institutions, and they have completely stopped selling farm salmon. And they've sent a very loud and clear message to the industry that they want a better product. They want to buy salmon from closed contained systems, not salmon that is killing our wild salmon and harming our oceans. Other retailers are adopting sustainable seafood policies. Overweighty in Western Canada is another example of that. And increasingly in the United States, the Food Marketing Institute have banded together the major retailers such as Costco and others to look at how they can adopt better policies. I think there's a risk, and consumers need to be very aware of what we might call the greenwashing labels. The industry, the aquaculture industry, knows that there's a trend towards sustainability and are coming up with all sorts of bogus certification schemes. And, you know, they're industry labels. There's no transparency. You can't find out what standards the industry is being held to. It's just, you know, a nice little green stamp that the industry gives itself and tries to claim that these are ecologically better than open neck cages, but they're not. And we're working through a process right now that World Wildlife Fund instituted several years ago called the Salmon Aquaculture Dialogues that involve NGOs from around the world, the key producing regions of salmon farming, and the major corporations to try and come up with some credible standards that would eventually lead to a legitimate certification. So for now, it's buyer beware.
Right. Well, I want to turn the mic over to you and say, is there something that you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Well, that's a big question. Well, I think the key thing to remember is wherever farm salmon is coming from, whether it's coming from Chile or whether it's coming from the Loch Duart farms in Scotland that like to market themselves as better and more sustainable, whether it's coming from British Columbia or New Brunswick, open neck cage salmon farming is harming our wild fish, it's harming our oceans, it's killing marine mammals. It's a bad industry that needs to change. And consumers and you listeners out there are the only ones who can really make it happen. So speak up. If it says fresh salmon on your menu, say, is this farmed or wild? And tell the retailer, tell the restaurant the costs of farm salmon. The price may look attractive, but the costs are devastating.
We've got the goods on salmon from Catherine Stewart. Plug yourself in at livingoceans.org and farmedanddangerous.org. This is Radio EcoShock. You can find more on our threatened ocean life at our website, ecoshock.org.
We've launched this campaign, Pure Salmon, to talk about the problems with salmon aquaculture.
Sea lice are a small crustacean, so they're the same group as crabs or shrimp, except they're parasitic, and they have a particular taste for salmon. And that's why we see so many around salmon farms. Well, they're a problem because they actually eat the salmon. They're what's known as an ectoparasite, or a parasite that sits on the outside of the fish, and when they land on the fish, they start from the outside and eat their way in. The fish that are, when they hit the ocean, are about the size of a AA battery. And the lice themselves are about the size of an eraser head on a pencil. So to put it into terms that are relative to a human, it would be the same as you having 50-pound lice chewing through your back. When you have significant aquaculture activity in open net pens, you also have a response in the wild salmon trout populations of rapid decline. And we've seen this in Europe, and now we seem to be repeating the European experience here. We look across the world where you have open net pen industrial salmon farming and wild salmon and trout populations, the story is the same again and again and again. The wild fish pay the price because you've got an abundance of fish. Again, you've got 1 million fish in a small net pen. As soon as one of them gets infected, all of them will become infected. And when all of them become infected, they produce a vast amount of these infective parasitic larvae, which have no choice but to infect the wild fish as they swim by. We've seen this again and again. The weight of the independent scientific world, or the weight of the evidence generated by independent scientists, is unanimous and speaks with a single voice that the farms are a major driving force in the decline of these wild populations.
The Pure Salmon Campaign's ultimate goal is to get producers to change the way they farm salmon currently. And if they do that, then the full promise of aquaculture will be realized, and we'll have more fish and good, healthy fish for people to eat.
For more information, go to puresalmon.org. This edit from Radio EcoShock at www.ecoshock.org. I'm Alex Smith. Thank you for tuning in.